So many ways to say I love you in different languages across the land. You haven't heard them all, so I'll tell you as only a true geek can.
Hello and welcome to Geekly Yoked, the world's best married Christian geek podcast.
Woo!
As always, I'm Lehman Kessler.
I'm Rachel Kessler.
That's Mother Rachel Kessler.
I'm a priest in the Anglican Diocese of Toronto. And what else? Oh, I have a PhD in medieval literature, which makes me a giant nerd.
And I'm a stay-at-home dad and actor also in the Diocese of Toronto.
Are you? Are you? I thought...
I'm in Toronto. I'm in the bounds.
I thought you didn't like to claim your Anglican identity.
I just meant geographically.
I see.
I've not been hired by an actor by the Diocese of Toronto not to be in the amazing, like, sexual harassment videos that get made.
You totally should have been. They got filmed at our church this time around.
See? I don't know why we didn't do it.
Oh,
missed an opportunity for me to awkwardly not sexually harass someone.
No, I think if you were in the video, you probably would have been somehow sexually harassing someone, and then we can deconstruct it afterwards.
Oh, I see. Well, I missed out on it.
Indeed.
So we were off by about a week because we had craziness with family and babies being baptized.
We baptized the baby. That's right, because you got to come to the baptismal prep course I ran for the families and be all like uber Baptist-y. It was awesome.
Yeah, I got to
I'm
be
gonna
like,
totally make you come to baptism prep every time now.
Do I have to bring a fake baby each time? Do I have to like be a different father? It's like, hello, I am very interested in your Anglicanism. But yes, I did spend a lot of time just starting every sentence with, as a Baptist. I thought it was all right. It was fun times. Well, also having Andrew there, like, sitting on his hands.
Yeah, I know, right? That was awesome. That was before, I think Amanda was still napping and you hadn't come over yet.
Yeah.
When I asked him to explain what being a godfather meant to him. And he was like, well, in the Middle Ages, the godparents.
Always a good start to a sentence.
And he just kind of like saw everyone else. It was great. It was fantastic. I was like, this is why I asked you that.
Well, we wanted to make sure that, you know, our daughter's Christian education was
indeed
well in hand.
Absolutely.
Who better than someone who studies obsessively medieval Sunday school?
Oh, yes. When he started talking about, well, and of course their responsibility was to be teaching the articles of the faith.
Did the other parents know that our faith has articles?
I don't think so.
Do I know that our faith has
probably
articles?
Not.
Yay, baptisms. We sprinkled her.
We? I did.
I meant the collectively.
Metaphor,
the church sprinkles her.
The church, yes. That's true. That's true. In my office as a priest, I do not function in my individual role, but as a representative for the corporate body of the church.
Which is good, because I sort of thought there'd be like a, I don't know, a conflict of interest with you baptizing your own child. It seemed...
Yeah.
Seemed a little... I was like, what's going on
here?
It
was a little weird when I was like asking... About, like, do you promise to such and such, and do you renounce Satan and all of his works? And I was sort of, like, asking that question and answering at the same time. It was a little weird.
Well, hopefully our child was successfully de-heathened. And according to Tom, is now immune from fairies?
I guess.
That's a thing? I don't understand what baptisms do. Apparently they protect babies from fairies. Hopefully, Tom, if you're listening to this, please explain in the comments what you were talking about. So that everyone can know how children are protected from fairies.
Is anything else exciting happening in the world?
Our house is no longer filled with family.
That's true. That's true. I have braces on both of my thumbs now. That's been pretty exciting.
Yay, braces. Because you're going to Ren Fairs, and so you need braces.
Or the baby is just destroying my tendons.
Oh.
And so I'm a crippled.
That's less fun reason to wear braces.
It is. It is. And it's really sad because I can't, like, administer the chalice at communion anymore.
Oh, no?
Well, because I have, like, my thumb is stuck in place, so I can't, like, wipe it. It's a very awkward procedure to try to wipe it off.
That's very sad.
Well, I don't usually lay people do that.
That is true.
Anyway,
you're usually on the bread.
Yeah.
Which our daughter did reach for.
I know, that was pretty awesome.
Since we've started
her
own...
She was just like, I want this.
Since we started her own solids.
Oh, yes.
So I guess the host counts as solids.
Although if we were a good Orthodox,
yes,
we'd be giving, because like in the Orthodox Church, everyone just kind of gets like soggy, wine-soaked bread. So the infants, like the infants are baptized and then given communion immediately.
Oh, well, there we go.
Were you not there for that?
I was there for that.
Oh yeah, someone asked if it was okay for when the kids could start receiving communion.
Yes, I believe I heard Sheila talk about the spoon.
Yes.
And the strange host slurry.
Yes.
So on to today's topic. We sort of bounced around, planned this about 5 minutes before.
Welcome to Geekly Yolk. This is how the sausage is made, people.
That's right. And we were sort of bouncing around from different ideas. And
bouncing around from different ideas from 5 minutes ago when I said, hey, our episode of Hannibal didn't download, so let's record a podcast.
Why didn't our episode of Hannibal download?
I don't know. iTunes is the worst.
Apple, you need to get on this. We need to see our grisly, horrible...
But you're getting a podcast, faithful viewers, listeners,
which
hearing.
Which you can review in iTunes.
Indeed.
Anyway... We decided sort of haphazardly that we hadn't expressly discussed Britcoms and various sort of British comedies, which are and have
been... Do we have to just talk about British shows? Can we talk about British other stuff?
Like culture?
Sure. Prince George? He seems to be doing pretty well.
I guess. What do you mean by things other than British shows? What like else are you interested in talking about?
Jekyll?
Oh, like oh, not just British comedies, yes. But British like dramas as well. Yes, we can discuss Jekyll or your crazy midwife show.
Call a Midwife is the best.
This whole thing was sort of sprung to my mind because I was sort of introduced indirectly. I think someone's brother posted on their wall a link to a relatively new quiz show, chat show, that weird sort of British panel thing.
Something along the lines of QI.
Yeah, that sort of like really the show is an excuse for comedians to be witty and funny and not really to answer questions.
This is a valid service it performs in the world.
It is. And we haven't really, or we don't do it very well in America. I think to like the weird 70s shows, like the Match Games.
That's because we're nowhere near that weird. Delightfully weird.
Like, but in modern day, well, it's funny. I've seen from every now and then, I do remember them trying it in America. I remember the Zappa brothers. Mm. Dweezil and Ahmet had some bizarre show for a while, which was essentially goofing off and like coming up with arbitrary points. And I believe Dweezil getting upset with Ahmet because Dweezil was actually trying to like consider what the points were and really duel them out. And Ahmet would be like, a million points to you because you're a pretty lady.
I see.
But they don't have the same continuity as QI and the right. Like. When I was in England, there were like three or four of these shows. But this newest one was posted to a friend's Facebook account by her brother. So again, I was sort of, you know, one of these things you sort of see flashing by is called Was It Something I Said? So the premise of this show is that it's all about quotations by celebrities, famous historical figures, politicians, and the like. The whole thing is hosted by David Mitchell from the Mitchell and Webb Look, which I'll probably talk about a bit later. But what I love about it is that one of the regulars on it is Richard Iowade from the IT Crowd, which we'll probably also talk about because we both love the IT Crowd. And yeah, it's just sort of goofy, like they'll give a quote and give three people, and you have to figure out, okay, who does this the quote belong to? Is it from Rupert Murdoch or Idi Amin or Lady Gaga? And they can be sort of difficult trying to parse out what these things are. But really, it's just an excuse for the comedians to show off and be witty and funny. The first episode I saw had a random Canadian comedian on, and it was very strange hearing all these sort of British accents, and then this one lone
Canadian
just like, well, I think. So that was bizarre. But the best part is they get sort of some highbrow actor to read all the quotations.
Ah.
So the first one I saw had Brian Blessed loudly declaiming all of these ridiculous quotes from people and then randomly breaking into anecdotes about how he got into a sparring match with the Dalai Lama and how his nickname for the queen is Knuckles because she's always sort of punching him in the arm. It's very strange. But anything with Brian Blessed sort of loudly and excitedly talking about things makes me happy.
I just want to see the Discworld movie where he plays Rincewind.
Not Rincewind. Mushroom Ridcully.
That's what I meant. The guy who shouts, Berser!
That would be amazing. I want to say they had Joss Ackland play Ridcully in one of the movies, which is strange because I think of Joss Ackland as C.S. Lewis from Shadowlands.
Right.
So, very strange juxtaposition.
And I, on the other hand, have been rewatching Dylan Moore in stand-up.
That is something I do quite often because Dylan Moran's stand-up
is amazing.
Amazing.
Oh, it's delightful. Now, Dylan Moran is the pompous lecturer in Shaun of the Dead for anyone keeping track at home.
He was on an amazing TV show.
Shall we begin there?
Black Books?
Yes.
Black Books is a great show. How did we get introduced to it?
Okay, so actually it was like the week that we got married.
Okay.
Our friend Jen
Yes.
Was staying at the House of Cheese.
Yes, original House of Cheese. The or secondary House of Cheese.
No, the original House of Cheese. Okay. The House of Cheese being the residence of five medievalists that I lived in before we got married, which became dubbed the House of Cheese.
It needed a name.
For reasons that possibly involved a lot of craft dinner, because that's what you do in Canada.
Yep.
So she was staying there and brought DVDs of Black Books. And that's where I discovered it.
I'm assuming you must have just introduced me to it.
Yeah.
Because it's amazing.
It is. So it is Dylan Moran, the aforementioned pedantic lecturer character from Shaun of the Dead, who is a misanthropic...
Drunken,
chain-smoking, chain-drinking, a horrible excuse for a human being who runs a used bookshop. And it is just amazing. And we even have a religious...
Oh, yes.
The episode where he's trying to get out of doing his taxes, so he actually talks to the sad little evangelists who come to his home.
And they have in-depth theological discussions.
What is your favorite favorite story about our Lord? We don't know. We've never gotten this far before.
I like the part where he helps the Samaritan. Well, no, I think you got that a bit wrong. I think there was a story he was telling about a Samaritan helping someone else. Oh. Dylan Moran is absolutely amazing on that show, as is Bill Bailey, and a very brief appearance by both Nick Frost and Martin Freeman.
And Simon Pegg.
Oh, Simon Pegg has a pretty extended role.
Freeman gets a very, very short bit in the very first episode.
Well, Simon Pegg is the absolute best. I think is he in season two?
Season two, where Manny, Bill Bailey's character, goes to work for like the big chain bookstore that opens up next door.
Yeah. Yeah. So someone who worked in a big chain bookstore, I like to think we weren't as bad as that, but whew.
Manny, how is your shirt helping the tea?
Don't eat muffins while I'm developing you, Manny. So that was very early on in our marriage. That
has
been part of our DVD collection.
Oh, but if you have not Black Books, you got to check. So let's, on the subject of, this is really the next generation of British comedians. I like to, the Bill Bailey, Dylan Moran, Simon Pegg.
Yeah.
They're the generation after Brian Blessed, really.
Well,
so,
yeah.
So must we talk about Spaced now?
Oh, I think we can.
I see Spaced is like in the same era of Black Books, like about 10 years ago.
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, and Spaced is amazing because it's where Edgar Wright and Nick Frost and Simon Pegg kind of began getting their start.
Right.
And
at the time, Nick Frost wasn't even an actor. Nick Frost was just Simon Pegg's roommate.
Just like a friend, like a buddy. Yeah.
And he was like, hey, I know this guy. And apparently he like didn't have actor's equity and stuff. And they had to go through this whole shenanigans.
But there was like another Nick Frost who was on like the rolls.
Oh, really?
And so like that's where the confusion was.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's completely sketchy. But Spaced is so good. Like at first, the premise really didn't appeal to me. Like I sort of thought it was going to be kind of weird stoner comedy. And it sort of had a Friends vibe to it.
Well, yeah, it definitely has that like early 20s slacker.
Yeah.
Thing late night because it was late 90s, right? Mid to late 90s, I guess.
Oh, late 90s, early 2000s. Oh,
that was more well, no, because the second season takes place just after Phantom Menace.
Oh, that's right.
So it
okay.
was like, oh, that's more than 10 years
so, like,
ago.
So, like, yeah, 98, 99.
But it's the Simon Pegg and Jennifer Stevenson as sort of people who meet up in a coffee shop, both having been kicked out of their respective living situations. And pretend to be a couple to rent an apartment.
Oh, that's right. And there's a brief cameo by Ricky Gervais in the final season.
Really?
Yes, because he's the one responsible for the ad requesting professional couples. Because they
oh, that's right. That's right. The whole thing is the whole thing ends up being based on like a lie. Yeah. But so look, it seems like it's going to be just this like really, really conventional. Yeah.
Oh, they have to pretend to be a couple.
Wacky stoner housing. Stoner early 20s slacker comedy, but it's so weird it's so full of like tropes and references.
Well, it was Edgar Wright just wanting to parody movies and use all of like the old like strange camera tricks and things from and make just lots of geeky references. and that's why we love
it. The one episode with the dog that's all based on like the
horror
Omen.
Movies. Oh yes,
and the episode where Daisy goes to work in a kitchen and it's a One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest parody. And my absolute favorite is the one where they set up the premise that no man can resist a pantomime gunfight.
Yes, putting your fingers out and getting into a gunfight.
So there's just this beautifully choreographed sequence.
Well,
it's all pantomime gunfight,
and you can sort of see the beginnings of Hot Fuzz, like in that moment,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
like
yeah,
it's
yeah,
that
yeah.
that same energy that exists in Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz and World's End. But yeah, it's
but then there's just one of my other favorite episodes is when again Bill Bailey.
Yes, indeed.
When Simon Pegg gets fired from the comic book shop where he works because he makes small children cry by refusing to sell them Jar Jar Binks dolls. You don't understand. You weren't there at the beginning. And so he goes to work at the other comic book shop and manages to conveniently get himself fired by that guy.
Yes.
When Bill Bailey hires him back by insulting Babylon 5.
Oh, yes. And then that was before you'd watch Babylon 5.
That was before I watched Babylon 5.
Now you have a deeper appreciation.
It's delightful. I love Simon Pegg.
Simon Pegg does make everything better, except that one episode of Doctor Who.
He wasn't the best. He made that, like, you don't know how bad that episode of Doctor Who would have been if he wasn't in it.
It did also have the girl from Black Books in it as well.
Oh, it did? You're right.
Like, that was a weird confluence of comedies that we liked in a subpar episode about...
Simon Pegg is the actor that I want to be my friend.
Oh. Do you want to be in strange little C-3PO R2-D2 recreations with him?
I do.
That's ridiculous. But we've really, I feel like we've actually sort of started a bit late in the game because I actually got into Britcoms back in high school.
Did you?
Because I didn't have cable. So we had PBS, and PBS was just littered with weird Britcoms, which I sort of always all assumed all came from the 70s and 80s, but I think some of them were actually like contemporary. The big one that I watched for a long while was Are You Being Served? Which, looking back on it now, would probably be the most misogynistic, homophobic program ever about the department store. But I remember I watched the crap out of that show over and over and over again. And then Keeping Up Appearances popped up with Patricia Rutledge, who was absolutely amazing. And it was ridiculous and silly and fun. But then a really great show, which I have never really heard anything from since, but was remarkable, was Rowan Atkinson's The Thin Blue Line.
Okay.
Now, I'd seen some Blackadder because a friend of mine who was a huge Anglophile had like given me his like VHS copies of that. And I'd seen Mr. Bean. I think another friend had a bunch of Mr. Bean stuff. So I knew Rowan Atkinson from like those two extremes.
Yeah.
But Thin Blue Line was really fascinating because it was sort of a cop kind of office comedy.
Yeah.
But he was just this like the lovable police chief. And I want to say like one of the main constables was either his wife or his girlfriend. So like there was sort of strange like domestic sappiness going on there. But it was so just sweet and funny and just so different from, again, the other sort of Rowan Atkinson-y things I had seen. He was much more not quite in Johnny English, but like that sort of like slightly blustering, bit full of himself, but like ultimately well-meaning.
Man, Rowan Atkinson plays a good vicar.
He does play an amazing vicar in a good movie ruined once again by Annie McDowell.
Oh, yes.
He
plays a vicar in Keeping Mum.
Oh, that's right. That is a strange movie.
That is a ridiculously strange movie.
That is a weird Maggie Smith murderer movie.
What? Who wouldn't love a movie about Maggie Smith, who is finally released from a home for the criminally insane and goes to live in a quaint English country village with what turns out to be her daughter's family?
It's very strange.
Yes. But she makes them all better. The great line with Rowan Atkinson where she's trying to save his marriage. So she has him read Song of Solomon. And he's like, yes, a wonderful allegory about the soul's conversations with the Lord. No, it isn't. It's about sex. Read it again. As only Maggie Smith could.
Oh, Maggie Smith. Maggie Smith pretty much is 80% of the reason to watch
Downton Abbey. Yeah, pretty much. 80%? Don't you mean like 90%?
Well, there's dresses and lamps.
I was also thinking of Rowan Atkinson's wonderful stand-up comedy, especially when he does, like, The Amazing Jesus.
Oh, yes.
we might have to put a link to that in the show notes, but he's doing the whole like Jesus at the wedding at Cana.
Oh yes.
As if it were a magic show. And then the servant said, "This guy is very good."
Now, a show that I wasn't super into, but I feel like everyone else around me in the 90s was, especially all my female friends, was Absolutely Fabulous.
I never watched Absolutely Fabulous.
I just could not get into it. It was so terrifying.
I remember being kind of astounded when I realized that the young girl in Absolutely Fabulous was Lydia in the Colin Firth Pride and Prejudice.
Oh, was she?
Yeah.
I was unaware of that. Okay, well, there we go. There's a non-comedy but super British-y thing. Would you like to talk about your love of all things Colin Firth?
I'm a girl.
You are a girl.
That's
man does look good in a sweater.
Contractually obligation to drool over Colin Firth? I don't know.
Were you introduced to that in college or had you seen that already?
No, I was introduced to that in college.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. What's more to say? It's just, like, it's perfect.
It is a ridiculously good and just, well, I mean, it's long. I guess that's the one thing sort of, you
it's
know.
It's only 5 hours.
I suppose if you want to get the shortened Keira Knightley version, it's available.
I will spray you with the water bottle we used to keep Bilbo quiet.
Wait, you didn't like Keira Knightley? You didn't feel she had the robustness?
Acting through teeth?
Was it Jennifer Ely? Is that the girl's
Jennifer
name?
Jennifer Ely, yes.
Jennifer Ely was in a...
Wasn't Jennifer Ely supposed to be Catelyn Stark?
Was she?
I think so.
I didn't know that.
I think she was originally cast.
That would be very different. She's not really red.
I feel like I'm making this up, but I feel like this is true.
Okay, I'm going to allow it. I mostly remember Jennifer Ely, apart from being in Pride and Prejudice. I remember her from this really distressing, super long Ralph Fiennes movie called Sunshine, which was like about like a various generations of a Czech family. And I want to say she was like his, in one of the sort of stories, she was his stepsister and there were shenanigans going on. It was very strange and Eastern European. But yeah, I think that really, you know, growing up, PBS was a big, big part of my what I was allowed to watch.
Yeah, see, that is very, see, all of this British stuff I really had to come by on my own. That's why a lot of it I got into in college.
Yeah.
The only thing I really watched in high school was Monty Python.
Monty Python was the other thing I
Monty
was
Python was
of.
The big thing. I remember it was the one Christmas the only time I have ever received a Christmas present that was only from one parent as opposed to both of them was when my dad got me a box set of Monty Python DVDs.
Wow.
And my mother made it clear in no uncertain terms that this gift was only from my father and she would not even go into the store to get it.
Was it just Life of Brian that offended her or just their whole...
It wasn't even Life of Brian.
Oh, really?
It was a box set of Flying Circus episodes.
Oh, okay.
So it wasn't even like one of the movies. It was legitimately sitcom.
Well, there we go.
So, I mean, like, I was into a lot more than just the
movies.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I feel like I saw Holy Grail via my brother.
Oh, okay.
He saw it at one point, I don't think he even really thought it was that funny. So I got definitely came across Holy Grail, and then I got into all of the other ones. I want to say I couldn't get through either Life of Brian or Meaning of Life. Life.
Meaning really, of Life is a bit, it's a bit rough.
Yeah. But even Life of Brian, I think, even now I have to confess, I can only get through about 2/3 of Life of Brian.
Oh, really?
And then by the end, it gets a little blasphemous for my taste.
True enough. But it does have the translating.
It does. And you know, it gets me, that's enough for
the
me.
The Latin scene.
Yes.
Fun fact about the Monty Python movies and many of the Terry Gilliam movies is they were, many of them largely funded by Beatle George Harrison.
That's right.
Which is kind of awesome. Makes me very happy, even if he wrote strange sitar music in his later career. Well, what I was going to get to was, because I couldn't watch non-PBS TV during the week, I was allowed to watch every Thursday night with my folks Mystery. And so that's where a lot of like my watching British-y stuff, you know, got really driven home, is watching all the Poirot's and the original Sherlock Holmes's, or at least the 80s Sherlock Holmes's, which were pretty amazing. But I love all of them. And then Coupling came along.
Oh, Coupling. I like Coupling.
Because Coupling we discovered in college.
I feel like I got Coupling in grad school. I didn't watch Coupling until I moved to Toronto. So I watched it with Claire.
Because I feel like I saw it, maybe I saw it when I was in England, but I remember watching Coupling with Tom and folks, because then we watched the American Coupling together, which we thought was pretty awful.
You guys might have. I did not see any Coupling until I was in grad school.
Okay.
But it's pretty fantastic.
The other show I got introduced to in England, which I think is the, you know, de rigueur Britcom of the last, you know, 20 years, was The Office.
Right. Well, I mean, The Office is, like, you just love The Office.
Why do I love The Office, Rachel?
Well, not why do you love The Office. I'm just saying, do you want to hold off on The Office because you love it so much and you presumably want to say much about it? Or, you know,
I think we can get into it. I mean, The Office, I want to say I saw it on an airplane ride when I was going to study abroad in England. I saw it on the airplane there, just one of the episodes. And it was completely out of context, and I couldn't tell if it was a reality show or not. Like, it was just on the cusp.
The American Office does not capture that just, like, bleakness of shots that are just slightly too long of people sitting at computers with no sound other than,
the,
like,
photocopier.
The photocopier,
the hum of the fluorescence. No, it was precisely that, and I think... Because it was one of those things where it's on the airplane and, like, it sort of cycles through. So I think I saw it, like, a couple, like, two or three times. And what I think finally I decided, like, tipped me off that this was fake, was there was, like, a song being played in a club and the song was played in its entirety. I'm like, it would have been edited differently. So if this had been, like, recorded. And besides, it was just cartoonish enough.
Yeah.
But I'm like, it's England, though. So, and I loved it. And I absolutely fell in love with The Office. And I remember watching bits of it. In England, but then when we got back to the States for the final year, it began playing. There was just tons of it.
Yeah,
and I have such a distinct memory of the Christmas special coming out, and my friend Jackson and Brian and I finding that it was out somewhere, and he was able to find a digital copy of it and, like, download it, and we hooked up his computer to his TV so he could sit and watch the slightly, like, grainy version. And I it just blew me away. And I remember whacking him with a pillow, like, in the last, like, 5 minutes at the final reveal. And I just love that show. Just recently, I went back and rewatched the entire second season pretty much just so I could get to the scene where Tim takes off their mics and talks to her and then puts the mic back on to say she said no. And it just kills me. Like, it's one of the greatest moments in television. And it was so small.
I believe we probably talked about it in our romance episode.
I think we probably did. But I'm going to talk about it again because now we're talking about Britcoms. I just loved it. And it was great. And yeah, as you said, the American one is a different show. And I'm very happy with what the American one is. I didn't watch all of it because there was 1,000 episodes. But, I mean, the British one was so just tight. And so just captured something that then extras.
Well, extras just got a little bit too mean.
Yeah.
And what got me about The Office was that, you know, it didn't seem mean in the same way. I mean, I guess sometimes it was with respect to David, but there was just such an earnestness about Tim.
Yeah.
He was so defeated and yet so... Well, willing to keep going despite being defeated.
Well, the extras universe was a sort of a dark parody of, like, reality, right? Like, all the celebrities were sort of, like, strange and weird.
Yeah. Whereas Tim was just, like, this one normal guy trying to hold on to his sanity in
craziness. Yeah, and I felt like there was, but I mean, he wasn't existing necessarily in a cartoon world, you know?
No.
Like Garrett was a bit of a cartoon, and David obviously was, but almost everyone else in The Office was sort of...
But everyone else was normal,
sort
right?
of, yeah, yeah, sort of, you know, swimming in a sea of realism, whereas in extras, it's just everything is awful and everyone is terrible except for Maggie. And I enjoyed it. And I mean, extras, I liked watching.
I could only get through extras by looking it up on Wikipedia to know that it was not going to have an absolutely horrible ending.
Soul-crushing ending?
Yeah.
Well, and then it got sort of super preachy. Like, its final ending, which I guess sort of worked. But at least it was
a preachy ending that was moderately optimistic about humanity as opposed to just kind of nihilistic.
You can watch any of the Life is Short show, the one with Warwick Davis.
I don't really enjoy Ricky Gervais.
Yeah.
He's just so...
Well, he began repeating the same stuff.
He's also one of those just really snarky... annoying atheist types.
Oh yeah.
And that informs so much of his humor. Well, it doesn't.
Did you listen to his podcast much? Because I did.
Very, very little.
Yeah, and that sort of came across. And yeah, there was definitely a sort of a weird smugness that was off-putting. Like it worked in small doses, but sort of over time. Like his stand-up is super mean.
Yeah,
like it's really unpleasant. Dylan Morins has just sort of veneer
The nice thing about Dylan Morins is that it's sort of there is this. He has this persona of someone who's disgusted with the world, but it comes off kind of in you sort of just want to give him a hug.
It's very true.
There's I think it's just something in his face.
It's sort of soft and forgivable.
Soft and forgivable and kind of love and you know, it's the kind of shtick of being schlumpy and talking with a glass of white wine in one hand and a cigarette in the other hand. Kind of comes across as like self-deprecating more than anything else.
No, it works really, really well. Now, have you ever seen any of Bill Bailey's stand-up?
Oh, that's amazing.
Where he's on piano the entire time?
Yeah, have a banana.
That stuff is...
The Cockney slang and stuff.
That stuff is so good. Man alive, I love that. All right, so we've done a bit of a whirlwind around. I'm now looking over at our collection.
Do we want to say anything more about coupling?
That's what I was wondering. Yeah,
we kind of forgot.
Because coupling, I mean, that's is that where Russell T. Davies, the other one,
Stephen Moffat.
Isn't that sort of where Stephen Moffat? I mean, that's the first Stephen Moffat thing I ever.
No, I would say it's probably one of the first big Stephen Moffat things I saw.
And we sort of, I mean, we didn't
really
like it.
Which is so weird because it's like he's made such a name for himself in sci-fi now.
Yeah,
but that is definitely.
There was so much
not
of it.
Sci-fi.
It is misogynistic.
It is misogynistic, though. So bravo, Stephen Moffat. I don't know if I actually talked about this on the podcast yet, but I went back and watched some of the episodes in the fourth series.
Oh, yeah?
Where the main couple are having a baby.
Oh, okay.
And there's like one whole episode that's about the woman coming up with her birth plan.
Yeah.
And the boyfriend just, you know, being very dismissive of the whole concept of a birth plan. And then when they go to the antenatal class and all of the women are talking about wanting to explore the possibility of natural childbirth, the guys are basically just scoffing at them. And, oh, look at you, silly women, you know, wanting to go through a natural childbirth because you're silly, foolish women.
Indeed.
I don't know. It rubbed me the wrong way. And then the whole series ends when she's in labor, despite the fact that they built up this whole thing about how she wants to have a natural childbirth.
Yeah.
It's the stereotypical thing of her screaming for an epidural. And epidural, it's wonderful. And then while she's under the effects of the epidural, Steve goes ahead with the nurse and tells the nurse to let her have a cesarean section because he's afraid of the ramifications in her body afterwards.
Wow.
Like, it is soups.
Yeah.
Misogynistic.
Yeah.
And terrible. And
This is the man that we've given Doctor Who to?
Pretty much.
Yay.
So that was
That was a bit of a after baby suddenly takes on a starker.
Yeah, exactly.
Starker view.
But I do love Jeffrey. Oh,
original Jeffrey.
Original Jeffrey. Well, there really is only an original Jeffrey. There's a weird, when he goes away in the fourth season, they bring back there's a weird appearance of like Steve's dream Jeffrey.
Oh, right.
But it's Oliver is the guy who's brought in. And Steve's rants were always fun.
Steve's rants were always fun, although again, sort of tinged with, you know, in retrospect, you sort of like, oh.
Well, in retrospect, you go back and you're like, oh, this is kind of a show about how men are all really fun and silly, and women are all incredibly uptight.
Or just insane.
Or insane. Like, the women who are allowed to, like, have fun and have senses of humor are insane.
Yeah. Well, it's also sort of like, oh, you think Steve is this kind of, like, parodic mouthpiece? And after sort of other stuff comes out, you're like, oh, maybe this is just what Stephen Moffat
actually thinks about women. And
yeah, and the world.
It's a little problematic.
It's not good. It's not a good scene. So moving away from horrible sexism.
Can we ever really move away from horrible sexism?
Not with British people.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. Yeah, they're pretty awful. But I do want to start touching upon the IT crowd.
Is there sexism in the IT? I feel like there could be sexism in the IT crowd.
I think so because, like, all the female office workers are just sort of like sexy.
Are just there to be like eye candy.
Yeah, or to be unpleasant.
And the one female character has, the running joke is that she has no IT experience.
Yeah.
And isn't actually good at things.
No. So, but the ID card is so wonderful still.
I know, it is. It gave us Richard Iowati and Chris O'Dowd.
It did give us Chris O'Dowd, which is the best part of Bridesmaids.
I might have once just watched Bridesmaids on Netflix and only fast-forwarded to the scenes that he was in.
Not the John Hamm scenes?
John Hamm is terrible in that movie.
Yeah, terribly awesome.
Ugh.
And Chris O'Dowd is very charming, it's true.
He's lovable.
He is in some bizarre TV show that Christopher Guest is creating or directing, which is in that kind of quasi-half-improvised style. I think it's called, like, Moon Boy or something like that.
Oh, yeah, I've seen this.
I have not seen it.
I've not seen it. I've seen reference to it. Anyway, The IT Crowd is a delightful show about the... Wacky misadventures and a woman who manages to bluff her way into the IT department.
Well, she does that thing that, you know, I think probably everyone does on, you know, when... listing their skills, she sort of lists computers as skills because, you know, she's used computers. She knows internet. And because she listed computers, she was made the head of the IT department and hijinks ensue.
Yes.
And it's another one of these great shows, which is pretty much just pure cartoon.
Yeah. I think my favorite is the episode where the two guys in the IT department are annoyed at her.
Yes.
So as to get back at her on being made employee of the month, where she has to give her talk on her area of expertise.
Uh-huh.
They give her the, like, weird little box and tell her that that's the internet.
Well, and then she convinces all the other executives.
Well, it backfires on them because none of the executives know technical things. So they all believe her. And it's hilarious.
Oh, it's a good... And there's Friend Face.
Oh, Friend Face is the best. Where they're all sitting around the office... On Friend Face. Oh, I feel so social.
Yeah.
It also has the guy who seems like he should be Brian Blessed's son, but isn't.
Oh, just because he's so loud and declarative.
He has rhythm.
Yes. But what I love about IT Crowd, and what I sort of go on about it, is that it's the Big Bang Theory if the Big Bang Theory were funny.
Yeah, right.
Right? I mean, it's a cartoon, and there's a lot of broadly drawn characters, but they're broadly drawn in a fun way.
Well, again, it's like the Community versus Big Bang Theory issue.
Yeah.
Where I feel like with Community, you're laughing with the characters who are awkward and weird.
Yeah.
Like Abed.
Mm-hmm.
There is, like Abed and Moss are both, like, slightly Asperger-y, autism-y.
Yeah.
But you love them.
Whereas Sheldon, he's just off-putting.
Really, yeah.
And, well, again, the IT Crowd and Community feel like something that was made by geeks.
Yeah.
And made by people who are ridiculous.
Well, and I think it's sort of like what we were talking about with Spaced.
Yeah.
Where when Spaced is making pop culture references, man, they are committing to them.
That is true.
It's not just a pop culture reference. It's not like using, oh, Sheldon is still upset that Fox canceled Firefly, laugh track. The cultural reference isn't brought in just to be a tag and a joke.
Yeah.
The pop culture references is built.
Into the structure of the whole episode.
So it's just, it becomes amazing.
Well, it just doesn't feel like it's written by committee. And Big Bang Theory does feel like it's written by committee.
You know, one of the greatest things is the Big Bang Theory without the laugh track.
That is amazing.
It's kind of like Garfield without Garfield.
Well, it just shows what a hollow, depressing show it is, right?
No.
Again, my joke I like to make is that Big Bang Theory is what you get if you sort of trawl through Reddit looking for what's popular and then use a bunch of cast off 2.5 Men scripts.
Yeah, pretty much.
So that's my thought on that.
And sexism, because goodness knows the girls can't be intelligent on that show. I guess Blossom is on it and is smart now, but she also seems kind of awful, so.
Yeah, I don't know. There's the whole thing that puts me off. And I guess we don't watch it, so we shouldn't speak too much, but everything I've seen of it, like every time I've tried to watch an episode of it, I've just been so just turned off.
I agree.
What doesn't turn me off, and which is sort of tied to Richard Iowade in that he is on this wacky panel show that I was talking about, is the fact that it also has one of the guys from that Mitchell and Webb look.
Oh, okay.
Which I absolutely love. And is
can we have a link to The Bad Vicar in our show notes?
We will have a link to The Bad Vicar.
I love Bad Vicar.
Bad Vicar is amazing.
Can we talk to the woman who is here, the one wearing the nice jumpers?
I also like the Nazi officers sitting around with pondering, Are we the baddies? It's really strange because I found another TV show made by the same team, Mitchell and Webb, because this is just a pure sketch comedy show.
Yeah.
But they did this very strange show called Peep Show, which was, I guess, more of a traditional sitcom in that it was about characters and their relationships and being awful. But the whole thing was shot from one of their two perspectives. So you were either seeing everything through the character that Mitchell was playing or the character that Webb was playing. And so it just gave everything a slightly surreal tinge. And I think you were inside their heads at the same time, so you're hearing their inner monologue. But they were also just odious, and it was depressing, and I think it would be the type of thing to destroy your soul, like Extras.
Yeah.
But Mitchell and Webb, look, is just a great sketch comedy show that it has great standalone episodes and standalone bits, but also some really hilarious recurring bits like Number Wang, which is their terrible game show, which makes no sense, but is Number Wang. And it also prominently features the actor who played the Marquis de Carabas in the...
Oh, really?
The original...
And also the dude in Jekyll?
He was also the sort of quasi-villain in Jekyll. Speaking of Stephen Moffat.
Do we want to talk about Jekyll?
I mean,
it's not a sitcom.
I feel like we should talk about like Brit Drams at some point. You know? But yeah, we can leave Jekyll for that.
There is a great British tradition of sketch comedy duos. Like Jeeves and Wooster. Not Jeeves and Wooster. Well, I mean, Jeeves and Wooster, yes. But Fry and Laurie.
Fry and Laurie.
French and Saunders.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, even Monty Python, which we've talked about, is essentially sketch comedy for that. And then, and even before that, you had the Goon Show, you know, that just great classic comedy bits, the guys who went on to make Bedazzled before they remade it with Elizabeth Hurley and Brendan Fraser.
So, referencing French and Saunders.
Yes.
Does this bring us to the culmination of our British sitcom discussion? Is there anything we need to talk about before we get into the religiously themed British sitcoms?
I think there is, and there is a bit of a connection, and that's Blackadder.
Oh, we have not talked about Blackadder yet.
Because Blackadder, we sort of touched on it earlier, but Blackadder is probably one of the absolute best. And it's Richard Curtis as well. Is one of just the best British comedies out there, and one that traveled around and did a whole bunch of weird things. I mean, you know, the first season is so different from kind of what came afterwards.
Well, it's like they were trying to figure it out, and they were trying to make Blackadder the idiot and Baldrick the really clever one. But then they were all idiots. It just didn't quite work.
Well, it was very expensive.
It was a perfect example of why you need a straight man.
Yeah. Well, they sort of had that with Tim McInerney, but then not really.
Yeah.
It didn't quite work. You did have Brian Blessed with an amazing beard and doing lots of wonderful shouting, which is really all you need. Also had Peter Cook.
You would
mostly know Peter Cook as Mewage, is what brings us together today.
Oh, yeah.
But yes, Peter Cook, I believe, played Richard II in the first season or series, if you will.
Yes.
I think so. I think that was like their big, like, here's our big star, and we've killed him off, so he's not going to show up again. But no, Blackadder really just, it's chock full of some amazing British talent who I think would kind of get discovered a bit later.
Hugh Laurie.
And Stephen Fry. Miranda Richardson, the only other thing I ever saw her in after this was as the evil witch stepmother in Sleepy Hollow.
Right.
But she was good in that.
Was she?
Sure.
Was you're using good and Sleepy Hollow together.
I like the Sleepy Hollow. You like the Sleepy Hollow TV show. I don't want to hear about it.
The Sleepy Hollow TV show is like reveling in its badness.
Uh-huh.
Not even badness, just zombie George Washington-ness.
Keeping on with our Blackadderness, which while it didn't have zombie George Washington, did have Hagrid playing, was it Webster? No.
Hagrid was playing the Ghost of Christmas.
He was playing the Ghost of Christmas Present, essentially in the Hagrid costume.
Oh, was Robbie Coltrane the one? I thought Stephen Fry played Webster.
No, that was Robbie Coltrane. That was his connection.
Sausage.
Yes.
Sausage. Samuel Webster left sausage out of his dictionary.
Yes, he did. But yeah, they did. So you had the sort of medieval Richard II era season, and then you had the Elizabethan season, where Queen Elizabeth was an insane toddler. And the sweet giant from Silverchair played Nanny.
Oh, yeah. When you was born, everyone said, Lord be praised, it's a boy. And then someone said, but he hasn't got a winkle. And then we said, but What? A boy born without a winkle is a girl.
Very perspective man, Sir Thomas More.
Anyway. Yay, Nursey.
Yay, Nursey. That's where she was. And then season three was the Regency era one, which is such a strange era to pick, but it worked. They were able to do bizarre Jane Austen jokes. Talk about how she was a giant, well, giant
Cornishman
with a big red beard. And then the fourth season, which I had a weird evening where Amanda and I just sat down and watched all of one night while I was sort of rocking her to sleep. It's super depressing because it's World War One, and they're like, we're going to do World War One, and we're going to do it right and make it really, really bleak.
Yeah.
And they did a wonderful job of that. So I like Blackadder. I like Blackadder. It's pretty
fantastic. And it plays on Rowan Atkinson's ability to do such different types of comedy.
Well, yeah, and it's different.
So different than Mr. Bean.
Well, it's very different from Mr. Bean. It's a much more acerbic sort of show, and he really bounces back and forth between kind of like villain and sort of like just lovable misanthrope.
Yeah.
And you're sort of rooting for him in some of the seasons, and then you're kind of, ooh, I don't want him to win, but I sort of do in season.
Well, season four is the most interesting because you don't want him to win because he's certainly cowardly and he's certainly... But at the same time, it's World War One. Well, he should be cowardly. He's the sane person in a mad world. In a mad world, right?
Like, and apparently in recent years, I think the current British Secretary of Education came out and spoke against Blackadder season four for being
unpatriotic or whatever.
Tarnishing and being a propaganda piece. I think I pointed out that you've done good satire when 25 years later you're still viewed as a great and terrible threat. So that was awesome. I think that's what we need from Blackadder. Oh no, I actually want to quickly touch on Blackadder because it had Lord Flashheart, who's Rick Mile, who we love because we saw him on stage.
We did.
We saw him in Noel Coward's Present Laughter.
You were later in.
I was later in as well. And we thought it was going to be awful because we were like, why would a play with Rick Mile be any good? And it was so funny.
I don't even remember anything about it. I just remember it being really good.
Everyone in it was great. He was great. I also know him from a very strange TV show, which I don't think you have ever seen, called The Young Ones, which is sort of part variety show, part sitcom, part political screed against the excesses of sort of 80s consumerism. It's very strange and very British. And Rick Mile plays a pimply socialist.
I just like Rick Mile as Herod in the strange 90s Jesus Christ Superstar.
He is probably the best part of Jesus Rent Superstar, as I like to call it.
It is so very 90s.
So many frosted tips and mesh vests.
As 70s as the original Jesus Christ Superstar is, that one is so 90s.
Well, they tried to angrily say, what's the buzz? Tell me what's a-happening. And you can't. You can't say that cool. They did get rid of the line, Jesus is cool.
Oh, that's just sad.
Which was sad. So that's our brief foray into the world of Blackadder and
Young Ones. Hipsters... No, hipsters are too ironic.
To do Jesus Christ Superstar? Or to make what's the buzz work?
Yeah. The current hipster culture does not have the, like, just...
The oomph for it?
The oomph of...
Just the sheer ridiculousness of it? Because I think if you're doing Jesus Christ Superstar, you have to own the ridiculousness.
But that's what I mean. The 70s were kind of... Like, one of the only good things about the 70s is that they were kind of... gloriously ridiculous.
Well, that's why Godspell ages so much better than Jesus Christ Superstar, right? Like, it is completely balderdash and, like, bonkers.
But, like, I feel like you couldn't do that today without being sort of self-consciously ironic about it.
Yeah.
I think that would completely undermine the quality of Jesus. I don't know. There really isn't.
As I mentioned on the I did the big crossover podcast. I talked about the big problem with Jesus Christ Superstar is that they made Jesus a tenor.
It's so true.
Handel understood that you have to make Jesus a bass or baritone if you want people to take him seriously. Otherwise, he's very whiny.
Speaking of which, my boss went to some opera written by Handel.
Yes,
and was just outraged that the program notes were attributing Handel's musical prowess to his Enlightenment ideals.
Oh.
And he was coming back, he's like, Handel was a clergyman! Handel was formed by the church! But no, you can't say that in the liner notes for the opera these days. Anyway.
Poor priests. Speaking of priests.
The this brings us to Father Ted. Should we start with?
I guess so. I mean, I saw little bits of Father Ted, I want to say, when I was in England, and I was not impressed. It was very strange.
Yeah.
There was some shouty man.
He was very shouty.
But you like Father Ted, or like parts of Father Ted?
I liked enough of Father Ted. I do remember one episode that a friend used to show in churches to talk about the way the church handles problems.
Go on.
Which is when Dougal, the like sad little, just like well-meaning but idiotic younger priest,
okay,
is it's a parody of Speed.
Okay.
So he has to keep the milk truck going 4 miles an hour.
Wow.
Or it will explode. So he's just going in circles around the roundabout in the tiny Irish town. And Ted's just like, oh, don't worry, Dougal. We'll take care of you.
Which accent was that again? Wait, I'm sorry. Was this Father Shrek? Go on.
So he sets up an altar and does a mass on the side of the road. And every time Dougal goes around, you just see the mass.
Aw, that's so sweet.
Yes. But that's kind of all I have to say about Father Ted.
Next up.
So we have to talk about the Vicar of Dibley.
We are contractually obligated.
I am contractually obligated to talk. But there's also another show that I want to talk about, which is called Rev.
Now, this I have not seen at all.
I think this is where we can actually get some meat out of this podcast.
What are you talking about? This podcast has been nothing but meaty.
It's just us rambling about British TV shows we like.
Meandering is a kind of meat.
So, yes, I am contractually obligated to talk about The Vicar of Dibley because it is fascinating. I mean, so The Vicar of Dibley is about the a vicar in a tiny town named Dibley. And what impresses me about it is that it, like so many British sitcoms, it is an utter cartoon as well.
Yeah.
I mean, these people are just complete caricatures.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much about just like Anglican-y church culture-ness.
Okay.
That it captures so perfectly. And it has so much heart. And these people are so lovable in their buffoonery. And what's interesting is that it actually was like, it's Richard Curtis saying, this is a political move on my part.
Well, he wanted to normalize
female clergy.
Yeah.
Right? Because the female priests were ordained much later in the Church of England than in Canada or North America.
Yeah.
In Anglican circles. And Anglican Episcopal, I should say. And, you know, he really wanted to show this incredibly competent, incredibly passionate female priest. And what's interesting is Dawn French originally didn't want to play the vicar.
Yeah.
She wanted to play Alice.
Oh, okay.
So Alice Tinker is the verger, the vicar's assistant, and she is just utterly batty.
Just
she is
constantly befuddled.
Oh, absolutely. The best bit, we should link this on YouTube because this is one of the, or on the show notes as well, because this is one of the best bits in the early seasons of The Vicar of Dibley.
Okay.
Where Alice just has this whole thing about how, you know the stuff, I can't believe it's not butter. Well, I can't believe it's not butter. But then I went to Sainsbury's and I got a home brand. They're sort of, you know, they're knockoff. And I can't believe the stuff that's not I can't believe is not butter is actually not I can't believe it's not butter. And I secretly think they might all be butter.
Wow.
It just goes on so much longer than that, but it's just utterly, utterly delightful. So Dawn French originally wanted to play that part.
Okay.
Because she didn't think the vicar would be funny.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And she had to fight. Like, it took this was one of these shows that was on the air for over 10 years.
Well, that's what's amazing is the way they sort of drop in and out of it.
Yeah, but it doesn't have that much, like, in terms of actual content. I want to say it's maybe 20 episodes or probably more than that, but not a lot.
No.
They just kind of would, every couple of years, they would just sort of
go back in,
drop in and do a Christmas special or an Easter special or a four-episode series. You get these little glimpses into their lives. And so along the way, you definitely see Geraldine, the vicar,
grow
or possibly diminish as Dawn French begs the writers to actually allow her to have some faults.
Oh, I see. Gotcha.
And not be so perfect all the time.
Yes. And sometimes be required to eat 80 Christmas meals.
Yes. Oh, that's such a great episode.
Oh, it's depressing. Every one of those puddings comes out. It's just, it's another knife in me.
But yeah, so it's interesting to see that. And just things like the setting for the Lord is My Shepherd. that they play at the beginning of it.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, our choir will sing that setting of the Lord's Shepherd, and the Lord is my shepherd, and it's so hard to keep a straight face. But it's just, also, you, like, don't really know the nature of madness until you've sat, like, trapped in an Anglican convent.
Yes.
Watching the Vicar of Dibley with 17 other candidates for ordination who are all, like, being screened for your suitability.
That is a very specific scenario to find oneself
in. I don't really imagine most of our listeners will find themselves in that situation.
Okay.
But it's, yeah, so just, it has so much heart. Sometimes I would like it if, you know, the vicar seemed to express, you know,
any kind of orthodox opinions or theological robustness.
Sometimes, yeah, theological, let's say theological robustness. But at the same time, it's just such a, I do think she's a wonderful, I appreciate what they were trying to do with the show.
Yeah.
Or what, not even trying to do, what I think they accomplished with the show. And I think just show it is a positive Christian, I mean, made by people who aren't themselves explicitly Christian.
No, but it,
but I do think it's a rare pop cultural instance that shows the church
in a
positive,
decent light,
like in a positive light of these are, you know, these are earnest people who all have their faults and their foibles, but at the end of the day, they are all really, truly good people who are trying to do the right thing. And even David Horton, who sort of starts out as being kind of, yeah, not necessarily the villain, but certainly the antagonist.
Yeah.
You know, who is violently opposed to women's ordination and is trying to get Gerald, you know, constantly trying to get the bishop to pull her out of their town. You know, even at the end of the day, you see how much depth he has.
Well, I think they had a really long time to play with these characters, and yeah, and they were able to make something kind of special. You know, it started off again sort of broad and cartoonish,
mm-hmm,
but sort of like with The Office and with David Brent, you know, over time they were able to begin to paint it interestingly without just sort of making it preachy or kind of lame.
Yeah.
Which also happens.
And then the Vicar of Dibley gets to marry Thorin Oakenshield.
And Thorin Oakenshield shows up. That's right. Wow.
Yeah. But this brings me to Rev.
Okay.
Which is fascinating because this is the other show. And I will confess, I've only seen the first season.
Oh, okay.
I need to, they're on like season three now. So I need to catch up. But, I mean, it's in one way, maybe this falls more into drama than comedy, but it's certainly one of those shows that dramedy.
Sure.
And it's like the, it's like the Vicar of Dibley's strange
urban cousin.
Urban cousin, okay. Yeah. But in some ways, it's more. It has more resonance for me as a priest in
a big city.
In a big city, right? And you know, in a lot of ways, Canada spiritually and religiously has more in common with the UK than the States.
Yeah, I think that's
like
very
when
true.
You look at all the demographic information and
well, just the history, right?
Right. So, you know, it's basically Rev is about a struggling priest in a struggling urban inner city parish and, you know, the various challenges that he's being faced with. The fact that he has all of these parents who want to get their children into the church-run school, but then don't actually want to have anything to do with the church or care about the faith at all.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, the fact that his, you know, the people who make up his congregation, I know those people. Like, you know, like, these are just staples of
good Anglican life.
Of Anglican urban life. And, you know, and the struggles he's having with the bishop and, you know, even all of the stuff with, like, the fresh expression, like, the church at one point is rented out to a group doing this fresh expression.
Yeah.
Right? And so for those listening to the podcast not familiar with fresh expressions, these are, you know, trying to be reimagine the church in fresh.
New ways.
New ways, right? But at the same time, some of the values that they're espousing are running contrast to his own values, and he has to figure out what
truly matters.
Yeah, what truly matters to him. And I don't know, it's just, it has, it's darker than the Vicar of Dibley. I mean, it, you see his wife, who's actually his wife is actually the woman in the Bad Vicar sketch.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yowzers. Yeah. Okay.
Because there are 8 actors in Britain.
That's very true.
You know, she's having a hard time. Like, what is her role in all of this? Because she's not the traditional vicar's wife. And at one point, I think they actually end up in the second season having marriage difficulties.
Yeah.
And so, like, it really is very honest about the challenges the church is facing today. And the writers, much like with the Vicar of Dibley, the writers actually did really solid research.
And this is still going on?
And it's still going on. And the writers did really, really significant research and talked to a lot of seminary students.
Oh, okay.
About what their concerns were with the church and what struggles they were having. And this is what's absolutely fascinating. The guy who plays the Rev,
yeah,
whose name I completely forget now. I just know that he played, ironically enough, I believe he's the guy who played Mr. Collins in the Pride and Prejudice.
Which one? Keira Knightley? Yeah. Oh, okay. I was about to say, not the...
So he's clearly just one of those guys like Rowan Atkinson who just does...
Shows up in everything.
Vickers.
Oh, he does Vickers, yes.
But what's absolutely fascinating is that he, in the course of doing this show, has completely re-engaged with the church.
Oh, okay.
Like, doing this program has actually brought him back to some... You know, I don't know how involved he is, but it is certainly...
More so than being Mr. Collins did.
Right, yes. And so I think they're two wonderful examples of depictions of the church that are... I mean, I would not say either of them is evangelical in any sense of the word, but they are very honest depictions of the church in popular culture with foibles and warts, as we might say, but also honesty and... There's
like
an
it.
Integrity to them. So I really, I enjoy both of them very much. And Rev, I really need to just watch the next two series. But the first season that I watched certainly had a lot of resonance with me and my experience in ministry to date.
Well, excellent. And there we go. I think we've gone around the world, or at least around the island of Great Britain.
Oh, by the way.
Yes.
There's a brilliant liturgy for May the 4th.
Oh, gosh darn it. Yes.
Online.
Yes. For those who haven't figured it out, May the 4th shows up on a Sunday this year. So.
And there are nerds on the internet. And you know what you get when you get sci-fi nerds and church nerds in living in glorious harmony?
Go on.
You get May the 4th Be With You, the liturgical version.
Oh, with all the strange hymns.
With all the strange hymns. Oh, I wish I had it open right now. May the force be with you and also with you. Lift up your hearts. We lift them up to the force. It is right to give our thanks and praise. So say we all, with the note. This must be the ecumenical version.
Wow.
I know, right?
This is...
It's fantastic.
Okay, well, we'll put this up for all...
When it comes time for the readings in the Psalms, they do note that they're using the Revised Common Lectionary, because what are they, after all, Ugnaughts?
We shall put this in our show notes for any other nerds who wish to peruse at their leisure.
Are we done now?
I think on that terrible note, we are, yes.
You mean that glorious note?
Oh, okay, yes.
I have to tell you that I sent that to our parish administrator with just the joking thing, just the joking title in the email of, I don't think this would fly on Sunday, would it? And he said he was not entirely sure I was joking when I sent it to him.
This is the confidence you inspire among your parishioners. So we are, that's us, that's it for us. We've talked about Britcoms and all their various glory and what they mean to us. They mean quite a bit. I'm sure you will hear more as we go on. But we will be ending this episode with Debs and Errols. I thought we'd add a touch of class since we're talking about all things British. And so,
can we just say John Oliver is amazing?
John Oliver is amazing. I love The Bugle so much. It's not a Britcom, but it's a British podcast, and it's so funny. And now he has his own little, like, Daily Show knockoff TV show on HBO. And luckily they're allowing various clips on YouTube. So I've been able to share in, like, 8 minutes at a time. It makes me quite happy. But no, speaking of class and all its glory, we're going to be leading you off with Debs and Errol's Pachelbel song.
Oh, nice.
So from the world of faith, family, and fandom, and no particular order, geek out, y'all.
Woo! Bum bum ba dum da da, bum bum ba dum da da, bum bum ba dum.
never seem to find a tune unique and new. So I sit and think and really rack my brain, but all the songs I write just blur and start to sound the same. I would love to write a song that has that sense of joy you give to me, but all that ever seems to come out are simple tunes from the mid-80s. I want to sing for you. Worth a thousand beautiful sung melodies I wish I could fulfill, but I lack such talent to compose songs, so I fall back on our friend Parker Bell. You stir my mind and heart, a joy I can't conceal, but songs I pen can never tell you how I truly feel. I want to dance and sing out loud so that everyone can see my love within. I wish I could write you a song so that all the world would want to join in. I would tell you if I could express my full feelings when I see you, but all I have is this simple song with trite lyrics and a couple of oohs. You know it's just for you. Really love.